Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Krishna Productions presents a narration of the book Sri Ishopanishad, Discovering the Original Person. It was written by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. In this context, the word Acharya means a person who has perfected himself in God consciousness and who teaches others, both by precept and example, how to perfect themselves. The book was published by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust of Los Angeles, California, in 1972, and all rights are reserved by it.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And now I, Amala Bhakta Das, the narrator, offer my respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter of his lotus feet. He is kindly preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya and delivering persons all over the world from the clutches of impersonalism and voidism by his books, recordings, and devotees. I pray that His Divine Grace may bestow His special mercy on me so that I may recite His illuminating words in such a way that whoever hears them may be inspired to want to know and love the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna and thereby become eternally engaged in His transcendental devotional service. And now I begin the narration of Sri Ishopanishad, Discovering the Original Person, starting with the introduction.
Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
The introduction is entitled Teachings of the Vedas and was delivered as a lecture by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada on October 6, 1969 at Conway Hall, London, England. Ladies and gentlemen, today's subject matter is the teachings of the Vedas. What are the Vedas? The Sanskrit verbal root of Veda can be interpreted variously, but the purpose is finally one. Veda means knowledge. Any knowledge you accept is Veda, for the teachings of the Vedas are the original knowledge. In the conditioned state, our knowledge is subjected to many deficiencies. The difference between a conditioned soul and a liberated soul is that the conditioned soul has four kinds of defects. The first defect is that he must commit mistakes. For example, in our country, Mahatma Gandhi was considered to be a very great personality, but he committed many mistakes. Even at the last stage of his life, his assistant warned, "Mahatma Gandhi, don't go to the New Delhi meeting. I have some friends, and I have heard there is danger." But he did not hear. He persisted in going and was killed. Even great personalities like Mahatma Gandhi, President Kennedy, there are so many of them, make mistakes. To err is human. This is one defect of the conditioned soul. Another defect, to be illusioned. Illusion means to accept something which is not, Maya. Maya means what is not. Everyone is accepting the body as the self. If I ask you what you are, you will say, "I am Mr. John, I am a rich man, I am this, I am that." All these are bodily identifications, but you are not this body. This is illusion. The third defect is the cheating propensity. Everyone has the propensity to cheat others. Although a person is fool number one, he poses himself as very intelligent. Although it is already pointed out that he is in illusion and makes mistakes, he will theorize, I think this is this, and this is this. But he does not even know his own position. He writes books of philosophy, although he is defective. That is his disease. That is cheating. Lastly, our senses are imperfect. We are very proud of our eyes. Often someone will challenge, "Can you show me God?" But do you have the eyes to see God? You will never see if you haven't the eyes. If immediately the room becomes dark, you cannot even see your hands. So what power do you have to see? We cannot therefore expect knowledge or Veda with these imperfect senses. With all these deficiencies in conditioned life, we cannot give perfect knowledge to anyone. Nor are we ourselves perfect. Therefore, we accept the Vedas as they are. You may call the Vedas Hindu, but Hindu is a foreign name. We are not Hindus. Our real identification is Varnashram. Varnashram denotes the followers of the Vedas, those who accept the human society in eight divisions of Varna and Ashram. There are four divisions of society and four divisions of spiritual life. This is called Varnashram. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita, quote, "These divisions are everywhere because they are created by God," unquote. The divisions of society are Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. Brahman refers to the very intelligent class of men, those who know what is Brahman. Similarly, the Kshatriyas, the administrator group, are the next intelligent class of men. Then the Vaishyas, the mercantile group. These natural classifications are found everywhere. This is the Vedic principle, and we accept it. Vedic principles are accepted as axiomatic truth, for there cannot be any mistake. That is acceptance. For instance, in India, cow dung is accepted as pure, and yet cow dung is the stool of an animal. In one place, you'll find the Vedic injunction that if you touch stool, you have to take a bath immediately. But in another place, it is said that the stool of a cow is pure. If you smear cow dung in an impure place, the place becomes pure. With our ordinary sense, we can argue this is contradictory. Actually, it is contradictory from the ordinary point of view, but it is not false. It is fact. In Calcutta, a very prominent scientist and doctor analyzed cow dung and found that it contains all antiseptic properties. In India, if one person tells another, "You must do this," the other party may say, "What do you mean? Is this a Vedic injunction that I have to follow you without any argument?" Vedic injunctions cannot be interpreted. But ultimately, if you carefully study why these injunctions are there, you will find that they are all correct. The Vedas are not compilations of human knowledge. Vedic knowledge comes from the spiritual world, from Lord Krishna. Another name for the Vedas is Shruti. Shruti refers to that knowledge that is acquired by hearing. It is not experimental knowledge. Shruti is considered to be like a mother. We take so much knowledge from our mother. For example, if you want to know who your father is, who can answer you? Your mother. If the mother says, "Here is your father," you have to accept it. It is not possible to experiment to find out whether he is your father. Similarly, if you want to know something beyond your experience, beyond your experimental knowledge, beyond the activities of the senses, then you have to accept the Vedas. There is no question of experimenting. It has already been experimented. It is already settled. The version of the mother, for instance, has to be accepted as truth. There is no other way. The Vedas are considered to be the mother, and Brahma is called the grandfather, the forefather, because he was the first to be instructed in the Vedic knowledge. In the beginning, the first living creature was Brahma. He received this Vedic knowledge and imparted it to Narad and other disciples and sons, and they also distributed it to their disciples. In this way, the Vedic knowledge comes down by disciplic succession. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that Vedic knowledge is understood in this way. If you make experimental endeavor, you come to the same conclusion, but just to save time, you should accept. If you want to know who your father is, and if you accept your mother as authority, then whatever she says can be accepted without argument. There are three kinds of evidence: pratyaksha, anumana, and shabda. Pratyaksha means direct. Direct evidence is not very good because our senses are not perfect. We are seeing the sun daily, and it appears to us just like a small disk, but it is actually far, far larger than many planets. Of what value is this seeing? Therefore, we have to read books, then we can understand about the sun. So, direct experience is not perfect. Then there is inductive knowledge. It may be like this hypothesis. For instance, Darwin's theory says, it may be like this, it may be like that. But that is not science. That is a suggestion, and it is also not perfect. But if you receive the knowledge from the authoritative sources, that is perfect. If you receive a program guide from the radio station authorities, you accept it. You don't deny it. You don't have to make an experiment because it is received from the authoritative sources. Vedic knowledge is called Shabda Pramana. Another name is Shruti. Shruti means that this knowledge has to be received simply by oral reception. The Vedas instruct that in order to understand transcendental knowledge, we have to hear from the authority. Transcendental knowledge is knowledge from beyond this universe. Within this universe is material knowledge, and beyond this universe is transcendental knowledge. We cannot even go to the end of the universe, so how can we go to the spiritual world? Thus, to acquire full knowledge is impossible. There is a spiritual sky. There is another nature which is beyond manifestation and non-manifestation. But how will you know that there is a sky where the planets and inhabitants are eternal? All this knowledge is there, but how will you make experiments? It is not possible. Therefore, you have to take the assistance of the Vedas. This is called Vedic knowledge. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we are accepting knowledge from the highest authority, Krishna. Krishna is accepted as the highest authority by all classes of men. I am speaking first of the two classes of transcendentalists. One class of transcendentalist is called impersonalist, Mayavadi. They are generally known as Vedantists, led by Shankaracharya. And there is another class of transcendentalists called Vaishnavas, like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami. Both the Shankara Sampradaya and the Vaishnav Sampradaya have accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shankaracharya is supposed to be an impersonalist who preached impersonalism, impersonal Brahman, but it is a fact that he is a covered personalist. In his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, he wrote, Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond this cosmic manifestation. And then again he confirmed, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, is Krishna, He has come as the son of Devaki and Vasudeva. He particularly mentioned the names of his father and mother. So Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by all transcendentalists. There is no doubt about it. Our source of knowledge in Krishna consciousness is directly from Krishna, Bhagavad Gita. We have published Bhagavad Gita as it is because we accept Krishna as he is speaking without any interpretation. That is Vedic knowledge. Since the Vedic knowledge is pure, we accept it. Whatever Krishna says, we accept. This is Krishna consciousness. That saves much time. If you accept the right authority or source of knowledge, then you save much time. For example, there are two systems of knowledge in the material world, inductive and deductive. From deductive, you accept that man is mortal. Your father says man is mortal. Your sister says man is mortal. Everyone says man is mortal. But you do not experiment. You accept it as fact that man is mortal. If you want to research to find out whether man is mortal, you have to study each and every man. And you may come to think that there may be some man who is not dying, but you have not seen him yet. So in this way, your researching will never be finished. This process is called, in Sanskrit, aroha, the ascending process. If you want to attain knowledge by any personal endeavor, by exercising your imperfect senses, you will never come to the right conclusions. That is not possible. There is a statement in Brahma Samhita. Just ride on the airplane that runs at the speed of mind. Our material airplanes can run 2,000 miles per hour, but what is the speed of mind? You are sitting at home. You immediately think of India, say 10,000 miles away, and at once it is in your home. Your mind has gone there. The mind speed is so swift. Therefore, it is stated, if you travel at this speed for millions of years, you'll find that the spiritual sky is unlimited. It is not possible even to approach it. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is that one must approach. The word compulsory is used, a bona fide spiritual master, a guru. And what is the qualification of a spiritual master? He has rightly heard the Vedic message from the right source. Otherwise, he is not bona fide. And he must practically be firmly established in Brahman. These are the two qualities. This Krishna consciousness movement is completely authorized by Vedic principles. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "The actual aim of Vedic research is to find out Krishna." In the Brahma Samhita, it is also stated, Krishna, Govinda, has innumerable forms, but they are all one. They are not like our forms, which are fallible. His form is infallible. My form has a beginning, but his form has no beginning. It is Ananta. And his form, so many multiforms, has no end. My form is sitting here and not in my apartment. You are sitting there and not in your apartment. But Krishna can be anywhere at one time. He can sit down in Goloka Vrindavan, and at the same time he is everywhere, all-pervading. He is original, the oldest, but whenever you look at a picture of Krishna, you'll find a young boy 15 or 20 years old. you will never find an old man. You have seen pictures of Krishna as a charioteer from the Bhagavad Gita. At that time, he was not less than 100 years old. He had great-grandchildren, but he looked just like a boy. Krishna, God, never becomes old. That is his supreme power. And if you want to search out Krishna by studying the Vedic literature, then you will be baffled. It may be possible, but it is very difficult. But you can very easily learn about him from his devotee. His devotee can deliver him to you. Here he is, take him. That is the potency of Krishna's devotees. Originally, there was only one Veda, and there was no necessity of reading it. People were so intelligent and had such sharp memories that by once hearing from the lips of the spiritual master, they would understand. They would immediately grasp the whole purport. But 5,000 years ago, Vyasadeva put the Vedas in writing for the people in this age, Kali Yuga. He knew that eventually the people would be short-lived. Their memories would be very poor, and their intelligence would not be very sharp. Therefore, he said, "Let me teach this Vedic knowledge in writing." He divided the Vedas into four: Rig, Sama, Atharva, and Yajur. Then he gave the charge of these Vedas to his different disciples. He then thought of the less intelligent class of men, Stri, Shudra, and Vija Bandhu. He considered the women class and the Shudra class or worker class and Dvija Bandhu. Dvija Bandhu refers to those who are born in a high family but who are not properly qualified. A man born in the family of a Brahmin who is not qualified as a Brahmin is called Dvija Bandhu. For these persons he compiled Mahabharat called the History of India and the 18 Puranas. These are all Vedic literatures. The Puranas, the Mahabharat, the four Vedas, and the Upanishads. The Upanishads are part of the Vedas. Then Vyasadeva summarized all Vedic knowledge for scholars and philosophers in what is called the Vedanta Sutra. This is the last word of the Vedas. Vyasadeva personally wrote Vedanta Sutra under the instructions of Narad, his Guru Maharaj, or spiritual master. But still he was not satisfied. That is a long story described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedavyas was not very satisfied even after compiling many Puranas, Upanishads, and even after Vedanta Sutra. Then his spiritual master, Narad, instructed him, "You explain Vedanta." Vedanta means ultimate knowledge, and the ultimate knowledge is Krishna. Krishna says that throughout all the Vedas, one has to understand Krishna. Vedanta Krid Veda Vid Eva Chaham. Krishna says, "I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas." Therefore, the ultimate objective is Krishna. That is explained in all the Vaishnava commentaries on Vedanta philosophy. We Gaudiya Vaishnavas have our commentary on Vedanta philosophy called Govinda Bhasya by Baladev Vidyabhushana. Similarly, Ramanujacharya has a commentary and Madhvacharya has one. The version of Shankaracharya is not the only commentary. There are many Vedanta commentaries. But because the Vaishnavas did not present the first Vedanta commentary, people are under the wrong impression that Shankaracharya's is the only Vedanta commentary. Besides that, Vyasadeva himself wrote the perfect Vedanta commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam also begins with the first words of the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadyasya Yata. And that Janmadyasya Yata is fully explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedanta Sutra simply hints at what is Brahman, the Absolute Truth. Quote, "The Absolute Truth is that from whom everything emanates." Unquote. This is a summary, but it is explained in detail in Srimad Bhagavatam. If everything is emanating from the Absolute Truth, then what is the nature of the Absolute Truth? That is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Absolute Truth must be consciousness. He is self-effulgent, svarat. We develop our consciousness and knowledge by receiving knowledge from others, but for him it is said that he is self-effulgent. The whole summary of Vedic knowledge is the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedanta Sutra is explained by the writer himself in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We finally request those who are actually after Vedic knowledge to try to understand the explanation of all Vedic knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
And now the invocation. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Translation. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Purport. The complete whole, or the supreme absolute truth, is the complete personality of Godhead. Realization of impersonal Brahman, or of Paramatma, the Supersoul, is incomplete realization of the absolute complete. The supreme personality of Godhead is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, and impersonal Brahman realization is the realization of his Sat feature, or his aspect of eternity. And Paramatma, or Supersoul realization, is the realization of his Sat and Chit features, his aspects of eternity and knowledge. Realization of the personality of Godhead, however, is realization of all the transcendental features, Sat, Chit, and Ananda, bliss. When one realizes the Supreme Person, he realizes these aspects in complete form, vigraha. Thus the complete whole is not formless. If he were formless, or if he were any less than his creation in any way, he could not be complete. The complete whole must contain everything, both within and beyond our experience. Otherwise, he cannot be complete. The complete whole, the personality of Godhead, has immense potencies, all of which are as complete as He is. Thus, this phenomenal or material world is also complete in itself. The 24 elements of which this material universe is a temporary manifestation are arranged to produce everything necessary for the maintenance and subsistence of this universe. No other unit in the universe need make an extraneous effort to try to maintain the universe. The universe functions on its own time scale, which is fixed by the energy of the complete whole. And when that time schedule is complete, this temporary manifestation will be annihilated by the complete arrangement of the complete. All facilities are given to the complete units, namely the living beings, to enable them to realize the complete whole. All forms of incompletion are experienced due to incomplete knowledge of the complete whole. The human form of life is a complete manifestation of the consciousness of the living being, and it is obtained after evolving through 8,400,000 species of life in the cycle of birth and death. If the living entity does not realize his completeness within the complete whole in this human life, which has the benediction of full consciousness, he loses the chance to realize his completeness and is again put into the evolutionary cycle by the law of material nature. Because we do not know that there is complete arrangement in nature for our maintenance, we make efforts to utilize the resources of nature to create a so-called complete life of sense enjoyment. Because the living entity cannot enjoy the life of the senses without being dovetailed to the complete whole, the misleading life of sense enjoyment is considered illusion. The hand of a body is a complete unit only as long as it is attached to the complete body. When the hand is severed from the body, it may appear like a hand, but it actually has none of the potencies of a hand. Similarly, living beings are part and parcels of the complete whole, and if they are severed from the complete whole, the illusory representation of completeness cannot fully satisfy them. The completeness of human life can only be realized when one engages in the service of the complete whole. All services in this world, whether social, political, communal, international, or even interplanetary, will remain incomplete until they are dovetailed with the complete whole. When everything is dovetailed with the complete whole, the attached parts and parcels also become complete in themselves.